This is Susan B. Brock, Telluride Inside and Out, and I'm speaking to Dayton Duncan. He is producer and the writer of Ken Burns' latest project, The Dust Bowl. That will be aired on PBS, I believe it is November, is that right?
That's right, November 18th and 19th.
So we are discussing that project and how Dayton and Ken got involved and other projects they've done together. Dayton, thanks so much for joining me.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So let's first establish your street cred. Were you hardwired through family history to become an author, or did you find your profession along the way by chance?
Oh, I think I backed into it. When I was a kid growing up in Iowa, my great aspiration was to be a pharmacist because the pharmacist in my little town drove a convertible. And I thought, wow, that would be cool, and that's what I ought to be. And then when I went away to college, I decided I wanted to be a lawyer, and then I decided I wanted to be an English professor. And then when I was out of college, I had the chance to become a stringer for a local newspaper here in New Hampshire. And I fell in love with reporting. You know, the chance to go out and find something out, to come back and try to explain it to people, try to write it in a way that was clear, hopefully compelling, in certain instances maybe even entertaining. I loved it. And from that moment on, some form of writing, whether it's journalism or history or film or books, has been part of my life.
I gather, because you were the author of 9 books, including a chronicle of Lewis and Clark and an examination of the most sparsely settled counties in America, a profile of Mark Twain. Do these subjects choose you, or is it the other way around?
Well, I mean, ultimately, we choose the subjects that we do our films on. I'm blessed in that the films that I write and produce versus just be a consultant on are generally films that are my idea, either because I'm already passionate about the topic or because I'm curious about it. But how those ideas come to me, I don't know entirely. Lewis and Clark, I read an edition of their journals when I was working in politics, and I became hooked on their story, not only their adventure, but what it meant to the United States as a nation, and ultimately wrote a magazine piece and then a book and then did a film with Ken and then wrote a couple of other books about it. So it's an odd process that I might be driving along. I was driving along out in the Grand Tetons, and it's when the idea came to me, why haven't we done a series on the national parks? It, like baseball, like jazz, is an American idea. It's got great stories, and wow, wouldn't that be a project to undertake to go to try to tell the story of how did these places get set aside for future generations? Mm-hmm. And that one came to me on the highway between Jackson, Wyoming, and the airport in Salt Lake City. So that, you get it different ways, and sometimes the story comes to you, or maybe you just finally surrender to something that's been bubbling inside of you for a while.
Wonderful. Thank you for that. And you sort of alluded to a number of the projects you've worked on with Ken. How did the two of you meet? How did you find that you were completely compatible? So sort of the genesis of your relationship. Yeah.
Well, I was the chief of staff for a governor of New Hampshire in the late 70s and early 80s, and it was during that time, 79, I believe, that Ken moved to New Hampshire. He was working on his first film, The Brooklyn Bridge, but to support himself, he needed to take freelance assignments, and one of them was from the BBC that said, please go and ask the following questions of the governor of New Hampshire about a piece that they were doing on efforts in the United States to revive aging mill towns, and we had a number of programs going to try to do that because we had a lot of aging mill towns in New Hampshire. And that's how I first met Ken, and we bumped into each other a couple more times. I got out of politics and into writing books, and our families became friends. We realized, I think when we both realized that the 4th of July is our high holy day for each of us, and that I forced my children to listen to me read to them the Declaration of Independence, and it turned out that's what he does. We have a passion for American history and an interest in telling its stories, and I feel like I've got the best job in America, you know, pursuing these stories that are of interest to me and then doing it with my best friend who happens to be the best filmmaker in America. You know, nobody can beat that.
Nobody could. That was a great story. United by the Red, White, and Blue.
Right.
So what is your working relationship? I think people would be interested in the dynamic of these projects.
Well, it's, you know, it's collaborative. Ken and I have, as I say, we begin out of friendship versus out of a working relationship, but we've established a terrific one. He's obviously, if it comes down to it, he's got a 51% vote over everybody else. But he rarely has to do that. We've all worked together long enough, not just myself with Ken, but our other producers, our incredibly talented group of editors. And we work, you know, we work things out where there's one person might have one idea, another person has the other idea. We give it a chance. We give all these different ideas a chance. And I think we're honest enough to know sometimes when somebody else's idea is better than our own. I think that Ken and I have similar sensibilities in terms of what attracts us as stories, what he calls emotional architecture. I love to be finding stories that delve into people's lives, that bring them alive, but also, you know, shows them not as pure white heroes or, you know, pitch dark villains. The complexities of the human condition are of interest to me. I really appreciate the fact that as a director, he likes to have scripts that are, you know, he gives great honor to the writing, not just the writing of mine or Jeff Ward's, the other writer for Florentine Films, of our narration, but he gives honor to the writing of the people who we're bringing to life. So, you know, the diaries that you hear from people who are long since dead go on for, you know, 30 seconds, 45 seconds, a minute and a half, where there are other filmmakers would say, well, that's too long. We've got to cut this down. I really appreciate his interest in the written word and the spoken word. As a writer, of course, I very much appreciate that. And as a producer, working with him, I learned how to, you know, make films, what to look for when we're out on a shoot, what things to focus on and what not to, and those things from Ken. And so, our tastes are similar, but some of what I learned as a producer, I learned, you know, directly from him.
Okay. Thank you for that. Now, would you compare and contrast the development of this particular project that we're is sort of our excuse for talking, which is the film that will, I believe, premiere at Mountain Film. It's The Dust Bowl. With other films that we've seen, either at Film Festival or at Mountain Film, Civil War, Baseball, Jazz, and the series about the American West. So how are they similar? How is Dust Bowl different? Did it have any unique challenges?
Well, the most unique challenge for us with the Dust Bowl was you could write a great documentary film about the Dust Bowl in the way that we, say, did our film on Lewis and Clark, which is to rely, obviously we couldn't interview Lewis or Clark or any of the members of the expedition who took off 200 years before us. So, but I think we were able to make a good film about that, and the same with the Civil War, with people who are no longer living, using diaries and written accounts, and the context given by experts, historians or writers on camera, and of course the visual material that is our bread and butter. You could do that on the Dust Bowl. It's a tremendous story. It's got great photographs. It even has incredible moving footage that was shot in the 1930s. But what I wanted to do and what Ken wanted to do was to try to make this come alive by the personal testimony of people who lived through it. Now, because this took place in the 1930s, that means that the actuarial tables were working against us. We ended up Julie Dumphy, the producer, third producer of our film, and the one who will be presenting it at Mountain Film, worked with an associate producer out in the sparsely settled parts of the Oklahoma Panhandle, the Texas Panhandle, sparsely settled parts of Kansas, Colorado, New Mexico, going to nursing homes, historical societies, using appeals that Ken made on local public television stations or that were aired on public television stations, trying to ask for people to come to, you know, a certain place for a round table, bring your photographs, bring your stories. And they did that over the course of the summer of 2009. And from that, we're able to find 26 people who we ended up going back to and interviewing on camera. A young person for us would have been, say, 86. You know, yeah. There were people that were in their late 90s, but they were people who were still had these very vivid memories, who could tell what was going on in the Dust Bowl in the 1930s to them, their families, in incredible detail, and sometimes heartbreaking detail. So this film, that was a challenge to find those people. But even more than the film on the war, this is, on the one hand, a very intimate oral history that is animated by these two dozen or more elder people who are telling the stories of their childhood in great detail. Now, it's also an environmental parable with a great and important message. It's got some historical characters, like many of our films do, who were dead but left behind vivid written testimony. But I think the heart and soul of this film are these stories that these people told us. And we've lost four of the 26 have already passed away since the time we interviewed them. This will probably be the last filmic account of this incredible period in our nation's history, told by the people who lived through it.
Okay, thank you. Now, films like, well, specifically baseball and jazz, are really upbeat. The Dust Bowl is not. Mm-hmm. So why should I go and see it? Is it going to bring me down, or is there an element of hope and optimism somehow threaded into the story?
Well, I mean, you're right. It's not the story of baseball, which is a game, or it's not the story of jazz, which is a wonderful genre of music. This is a story about a real event, the worst man-made ecological disaster in our nation's history, that takes place at the same time as the worst economic crisis in our nation's history. So these people were getting a double whammy of the Dust Bowl, in which their fields were blowing away, children were dying from what was called dust pneumonia, their cattle were dying, their crops were ruined, and it's also, by the way, the Depression. It's a hard and there are some very heartbreaking, hard stories that we captured from the people we talked to. At the same time, what emerges from it, I believe, are two other things that make it important. One is, it's an incredible story of human perseverance. I mean, you look at these photographs, you watch the footage, and you think, my God, how could anybody, you know, why would anybody stick it out for 2 months, let alone for 10 years? Mm-hmm. And the stories that are told, and the sturdiness, if you will, that comes through from some of these homestead families, are incredible and heroic, rise to the heroic. And the other reason that I think it's a film worth watching is that I think it does have an important underlying message to tell us in a time of global warming about our relationship to the land, our relationship to nature, how we need to respect nature and don't try to impose on it expectations that will come back and bite us, or worse. So it's an important story about this little known and often overlooked moment in American history, in which a president of the United States, sitting at his desk in Washington D.C. certain days, could wipe his finger across his desk, and a little bit of Oklahoma would have drifted into the Oval Office from one of these monster storms that were picking up in one day as much soil as the United States dug for the Panama Canal over the course of a decade. It is on a scale that is just almost beyond belief, and I think important in that respect, important to know how could this have happened, and inspiring in certain ways of saying, and how could anybody have survived and stuck it out?
Okay. Thank you very, very much. This has been Susan B. Brock speaking with Dayton Duncan. The subject has been Dust Bowl, filmed by Ken Burns and produced by Dayton Duncan and others. And it will be screened this coming weekend, Memorial Weekend, at Mountain Film in Telluride. Dayton, thanks so much for joining me.
It's been my pleasure.